to Spark Your Fire podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I am doing the introduction again just because David is getting lazy day by day. But we do have him on the show. Somehow he manages to pull his pants up and come on the show every time.
Yes, mate. We only get the best from the Sydney people. Let's put it this way, okay? Only the best of the best.
Well, that looks like the Sydney people are a bit lazy, mate. You never do the intro these days.
I was just thinking I can give you, I like to put you on the spot, you know, like that's the whole concept behind it.
Fair enough. So we have another special guest, David, on the show today. And this special guest is from Sydney for a change. Normally we get good guests from Melbourne, but this one is from Sydney. So do you want to introduce him quickly while he's sitting next to you?
Yeah, we got Andrew Egan from McConnell Byrne Real Estate today. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent.
It's a beautiful day in Sydney. I don't know what it's like in Melbourne.
It's like 30 degrees today.
Melbourne is always beautiful, mate.
When you're on an island, you can tell us that,
James. I used to live there. Don't lie.
See, there you go. That's the thing about Sydney people, right?
Right.
Anyway, I mean, Andrew, I'd like to extend a warm welcome.
And we'd like
to extend a warm welcome for you to come onto the show. And as far as I understand, actually, tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, what do you do and where did you start?
Yeah, so I'm 24 years old. Sort of spent most of my life growing up in Sydney, had a brief stint in Melbourne, was born in Sydney, then we moved to Melbourne for a couple of years, and I've been in Sydney for the last 20 years.
Why did you move to Melbourne? Sorry, Jennifer.
For dad's work.
Oh, so right, okay.
My father is in a chemical distribution company that's got offices all around Australia and internationally as well, and we used to move around a little bit for his work. Not so much now, but when he was moving up the ranks, that's what he would do.
So you had a bit of taste of Melbourne as well.
Yep, a big fan of Melbourne. I actually quite like it, as much as I hate to admit it. The beaches aren't as good.
Don't tell Jazz that.
The beaches aren't as good, but it's a good city.
Fine, Andrew, you are more than welcome to Melbourne anytime, mate.
Now I am? Okay, great.
We'll welcome you with open arms.
But professionally, so my background is as a real estate agent. So I came straight out of school in 2013 and I've been working as a real estate agent since.
Mm.
Worked my up from an admin sort of role into a sales associate, sales assistant, and now sort of a standalone agent in McConnell Byrne, which is based on the upper north shore of Sydney.
Yeah. What made you want to start as a real estate agent? That's quite a unique path.
I've always loved sales. Growing up, always buying and selling things, buying cars, making a profit, things like that. So naturally, it sort of always sparked my interest. When I was in high school, actually, I did TAFE on the side as a plumber.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a bit of a different path, and while I was doing that, I decided that this wasn't quite what I wanted to do. So I looked into real estate, went around and met a few different real estate agents.
Yep.
Thought, hey, this is pretty good. I like this industry. And then from there, just have been in it since and love it. It's hard work, but I like the industry.
Like everything, you know, I'm sure everyone have a perception of that agent just do easy work, you know, they only work one day a week, which is Saturday, just need to do inspections and then, you know, just wait for the contract to come in, which obviously is very different to the reality of things.
Yeah, we're experiencing that at the moment. But certainly, there's a facade and I get it. But there is a lot of hard work that goes behind the scenes and it is quite an all-consuming job. You're available 24/7, 7 days a week.
Absolutely.
And it just takes up a lot of your mental energy. But, I mean, that's part of the reason I love it. It's the thrill of the chase, putting deals together and just meeting people, like-minded people. They're great to work with.
That's bust the myth a little bit. So how many days do you actually work?
Well, I mean, at the moment it's probably it's 7 days, but it's not a full 7 days. It's a solid five and then sort of a Sunday, a few hours of open homes and a full day Saturday and probably a Friday I'll work 5-6 hours.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as I said, it's all consuming.
Yes.
But it's like you wouldn't be doing it unless you enjoyed it.
Correct. You do have a lot of passion about it, right?
Yeah.
To be able to survive in this industry.
Yeah, and I mean, it comes back to your why. Why are you doing it? So that's, I mean, if the why is big enough, then the rest doesn't matter.
Absolutely. So, actually, because since we got you here, let's talk a little bit about Sydney market.
Yeah.
How are you finding Sydney market so far?
I think, much like Melbourne, Jazz, Sydney market's very similar to what's happened in Melbourne. We've experienced a lot of a downturn in the last 18 months.
Mm.
And right now in the last 8 to 12 weeks, we've experienced a bit of an uplift. And it seems like what we're seeing is consistently we're above sort of 2016 prices, which is, I guess, the peak. We're back at those sort of levels, what it seems.
In terms of the interest, in terms of the offers. So
what we're experiencing from buyers, a lot more urgency, and they're coming forward with offers. We're not chasing as much. However, there are still sort of isolated properties that aren't doing that. But overall, the market certainly kicked a lot harder than we expected it to. I guess that's based on the election result and the interest rate cuts.
And the lending easing a little bit as well. Yeah, the sentiment's changed.
Sentiment's changed. And overall, we're just seeing a lot more urgency from the buyers. This time, 2 months ago, I'd be having a different discussion in the market we're in. But now it certainly feels like it's changed. But also, another factor to take into account is that the stock is really low.
Yes.
In our marketplace, Ko'ringai, stock's down about 35-40%.
Wow.
Which,
really?
I mean, that's why the prices are doing what they're doing, because competition. Buyers don't have much to choose from, so anything they are looking at, they're competing for. And they're willing to sort of sacrifice on, say they want 5 bedrooms, they might look at a larger four-bedroom home, because that's just all that's available.
So for our listeners, just so they understand where you're talking about, where do you specialise in the areas?
Yeah, so I guess the key sub is I look after a sort of Gordon to Roseville, or Roseville to Gordon if you're looking at it.
So the upper North Shore line.
Upper North Shore.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly focused on the apartment market, but now looking into the housing market as well.
Okay, excellent.
And I guess your average price for an apartment in that sort of region for a 2-bedroom unit, you'd be looking 800 to 900.
900.
3-bedroom, you're looking around the mill, and a 1-bedroom, probably around 650, 600.
Yeah.
So it is quite a sort of a premium market. It's certainly not water views, but you certainly do pay quite a lot given the location and the schooling that's in the area.
Mm. Andrew, did you just said that the prices have already hit the all-time high of 2017? So have we recovered the prices to that point in Sydney?
Yeah, I mean, we feel that they're back at that sort of level. We sold a number of properties that have actually come back onto the market that have sold in that time, and they're getting similar, if not a little bit more than what they were getting at that point. So it's crazy to think that it's only taken 2 months and we're almost back at those levels. And whether that's a true reflection of the market or just this little spike, I'm not sure, but it certainly is quite, I guess, a lot of confidence in the market, and people are willing to move forward pretty quickly.
And just to give you a context as well, you know, those areas that Andrew's selling, I don't think they dropped too much. They were pretty resilient in terms of the price figures.
They were, but I think if you look overall in that Ko'ringai market, we probably did drop 10 to 15%.
Okay, so we did.
We did significantly see a shift, and now it's just a different feel on the ground when you're having conversation with buyers,
So that's interesting. So if we have already recovered the prices to their all-time high of whatever the drop was, 10, 15% in those areas even, what's the sentiment within the industry? What are you guys hoping next year?
I mean, there's two sort of mindsets. There's obviously the sustainability mindset, because I think if we experience the same growth we have over the last 2 months into next year and beyond, it's really not sustainable based on the economy and inflation. But then as from a real estate agent's point of view, we obviously, selling property is a lot easier in this sort of market than it has been over the last 18 months. So it would be great for it to stay as it is and grow a little bit more. Is that sustainable? I'm probably not sure. I think that the spring market's going to be a real test of what's going to come, because typically we find more property comes onto the market in spring, almost double a lot of the time than in that winter market. So all of a sudden we lose that, I guess, competition element, because it's more properties but less the same amount of buyers. So there's dilution of those buyers across the market. That's when we're going to, I guess, see the test in what the market's going to do.
Are you seeing more stock coming up?
We do have more stock, not as much as we typically would this time of the year, but we're certainly, we're growing our market share as an agency, but whether the rest of the competition is, I'm not sure at the moment.
Yep.
We're in for a pretty good last quarter, but it's certainly not going to be record-breaking.
Right. So you are also an investor, Andrew, from what I understand, right?
Yeah.
At what age did you got started into the investment space?
I think I bought my first property when I was 22. Right now I'm holding 2 properties in my portfolio and looking to acquire a third now. And I bought my second one about a year ago or 14 months ago.
And what made you start, or what made you wanting to look at buying?
It's always one of those things that comes back to who's influenced you.
Yes.
I've had a lot of great mentors up until this point and even now. who have always said property is a great investment. There's other investments out there. Crypto is one of them. But property's always been something I've been interested in. And given the industry I work in, it's a lot easier for me to understand. And pricing property and understanding demographics and areas, it's, I guess, second nature almost, in that you can understand it pretty quickly. But I guess the key people who have mentored me up until this point, one would be Michael Shah. He's a mortgage broker as well, and holds a substantial portfolio himself. And then there's some other sort of more older business mentors of mine that have always said, and they own portfolios as well, that property is a good investment. So I guess it comes back to, they've always, from a young age, they've said, look at property, look at property. And then it got to a point where I was, had a little bit of money in the bank, and it's, okay, now what do I do? And I guess with that investment journey, one of the struggles I had, if we want to go into that, was that everyone has an opinion on property.
Of course.
And everyone's opinion is different. So you would go and you talk to, I mean, you always look at people older than you and what they've done, successful people in business or whatever. And you go and talk to them, and one person would say, oh, buy in Sydney, buy an apartment off the plan in Sydney, buy an apartment off the plan in Docklands, buy in Geelong, buy in Newcastle, buy in Brisbane, buy in Crespin. There's all these opinions on what you got to do and what's going to make you money. But then you look at it and you just sort of deflate it because you don't know. You just look at it and you're like, okay, I've got all these opinions. I'm going to disappoint someone, but what's the best opinion? And that's where Michael Shah has really sort of allowed me to understand investing to a whole nother level. And number one, it's okay, it might not necessarily be the location, it's all about the deal. If you're making money on the way in and building equity straight away, that's that's a quicker way to invest. So where my focus is at the moment and has been is in that sort of Logan region. Some people might disagree with that, but it's certainly easier to hold property there. And that, I mean, over the long term, being that I'm a little bit younger, it's a long term perspective. And I mean, with the 6% yield, it's pretty easy to hold property.
Pretty robust.
Yeah.
So the main reason is basically because it's got good rent yield.
Well, I mean, it's got good rent yield. Yep. So being 24 and sort of building my career, the income is not necessarily as high as it will be, I hope it to be down the track. So that's a big factor. The long-term perspective of Logan, I mean, I think there's a lot of metrics that it is going to experience capital growth. And a lot of people are backing that. So I have belief in that over the next 10 years, it is going to be a different market to what it is now. So it is a combination of yield and also long-term capital growth perspective.
And what sort of properties did you buy?
So both are freestanding brick and tile houses.
Great.
I wanted to make sure that I wanted brick and I wanted tile houses. The first one I bought is in a suburb called Crestmead in the Logan district.
Yep.
It's a pretty nice suburb for Logan. I bought that. That's a four-bedroom, two-bathroom, two-car high side of the street house. Bought that for in the mid 300s, and it rents out for 420 a week.
Nice.
So pretty good return. Yeah. The second one, three bed, one bath, one car, brick and tile again, double brick actually, and that's sort of near the shops, and I paid 290 for that. Rents for 330 a week.
So both at Crestmead?
Yeah, both in Crestmead.
Okay. And do they have any kind of value add that you can do later on to generate equity?
Not necessarily at the moment.
Okay. So just buy and hold and
buy and hold.
Yeah.
So that's a sort of the next facet is obviously the stages in what you buy and what point of your journey.
Yes.
And now I'm looking at, okay, I want a larger block with the value add.
Mm.
Can I either sort of buy a two-level house and put a granny flat downstairs and rent out the top? Really want 1,000 square meters so I can subdivide down the track or put a granite flat in the back.
No, that's good, because usually I think the first couple is when you're still treading the water and you don't necessarily know what you're getting into. Did you use a buyer's agent, by the way, for the first two?
So, I mean, Michael Shah, he knows the Logan market
incredibly well. Yes.
So he really mentored me. But with his mentoring, it's really good in that he won't give you the answers. He'll make you work to understand why the answer is the answer. So if I asked him, is this a good property, he'd say, well, you tell me, and then you give your reasons. But so it took a while to build to that, to understand. So he would he's constantly testing you. What's this worth? He'd send you a property. What's this worth? What's this worth?
Yeah.
And then when you have that confidence and you both are on the same page, then you really seriously look at it.
Mm.
From my perspective, I actually didn't employ a buyer's agent, but I had a property manager up there that would go and inspect the properties for me, send me a video, and then I'd do the building and pest report.
Nice.
And obviously then I know the true rent, what her perception is of the true rent of that property,
yep,
and potential, and also the overall condition.
Mm.
And okay. I guess the benefit there is that I know the property, I've got someone to look at it who's on a buyer's agent, so I'm not paying that fee.
So, Andrew, keen to see what your thoughts are. We have seen 3 rate cuts this year.
Yep.
Right? And I think the RBA cash rate right now sits at 0.75%.
Mm.
With a kind of mentoring and the way you do your analysis, what do you think, where do you think the property market is headed in the next few years? I mean, do you think as a real estate agent and as an investor and as a mentor in that space, not mentor, getting mentored in that space, that it is going to see the similar kind of growth? Or what's the industry sentiment and your thoughts around that?
I mean, it's all crystal ball stuff. I think the RBA, APRA, they're all doing everything they can to make the market as sustainable as it can be. When we're talking about markets, I mean, we're looking at the Sydney market. I don't see that it can grow at the rate it is growing for much longer. It is not sustainable. And pricing out first home buyers, it's playing with fire. Over the next 2-3 years, I think we'll probably in for a pretty steady market. I don't think there's going to be much growth. 5 to 10 years, I think we'll start to see some growth. Not what we experienced over the last 3 to 4 years or 5 years, but I think overall, if you look, we're probably more back into that market in, I think, the mid-2000s or early 2000s, where it's a little bit slower, steady, but yep, still moving.
Yeah, maybe a couple of percentages every year.
Exactly.
Kind of stuff.
I think if you're looking at other markets like Brisbane, more so the housing market, you're probably going to see some growth up there. I don't think the apartments in Brisbane and I guess Melbourne or even Sydney are really going to experience, particularly the newer apartments. Older apartments are quite sought after, I know, in Sydney, but newer apartments, there's just a lot of supply coming. They're all sort of in that completion phase now. I just think there's a lot of stock coming to choose from.
So what makes you think that Brisbane market will grow a bit more or will do a bit better than the other markets?
A few things. I think that economy is a little bit stronger based on the workforce, particularly in that Logan market. It hasn't seen much growth over the last sort of 10 years. We're still in the prices that it was in, pretty much, or a little bit more than what it was in. I think there's a bit of money getting spent in infrastructure up there that's going to – new university, things like that, that's going to reflect the prices. I think if there was to be – I don't want to throw the word around – a recession – those markets would probably perform better because they're not necessarily going to be as affected by a recession, on my opinion.
Because of their lower price range.
Lower price range, the sort of the jobs those people are working.
Yeah.
It's not those sort of the bankers, things like that.
Right.
Now that you've used the word recession, I am keen to understand or know, are you saying that there's a recession on the way or
what? I don't want to throw that word around lightly. I don't. It's 50-50 line ball for me. What's going to happen? I think the economy is not strong. I don't think anyone's going to say it is. However, whether we sort of dip into or get close to a recession, I think that's probably where we're heading than an actual recession. It's really just. I mean, if you look at employment growth, inflation and all those sort of metrics, it hasn't been a great economy for a little while.
Mm.
So how that affects us in the long term, I don't know. But I just – right now the property market is the only thing that's moving,
at least right now. But then if you're saying the chances are 50-50, wouldn't you want to keep your powder dry? So if in case it hits the recession, if it does, with that 50-50 chance – that you'll rather go into the market at that time to find better deals or better buyers?
I think it depends what market you're focusing on. If you're looking in the Sydney market, yeah, I'd be waiting. More so for the larger houses and off-the-plan apartments.
Mm.
I think, as I said, the older apartments are doing well. I think for Brisbane, it's a different story. That market, has not grown a lot in the housing sector for a little while, so I don't see it could go backwards much. But, I mean, and then Melbourne, it'd be the same as Sydney. But it just depends what market you're looking at, in my opinion, and how it's going to be affected. Because I know when, for instance, Ku-ring-gai in the last recession, our market is very much a sort of professional banker or lawyer. That's the sort of high-end net worth individual with a professional. So that is a market in the last sort of financial crisis was affected heavily because bankers were losing their jobs. Lawyers were, more bankers than anything, selling their assets, having to liquidate. And that's when they're in a corner that they have to sell, and that's when the price comes down. All of a sudden, that's your new precedence in the market, and that sets the tone.
Interesting. That's some really good thoughts over there. So how soon are you actively hunting in the Queensland market at this point?
I'm looking. I looked at a property a few weeks ago, considered it a lot. I probably wouldn't say I was serious about it. I'm probably a month or so off really purchasing.
Mm.
But it's more so this one, I probably would say the first two is more I really want to get into the property market. This one is when the right deal pops up. That's when I'll buy, because I know what I want now. So it's not so much, this stacks up on paper. It's a particular product I'm after. So when that comes up at the right price, then I'll look at it. If it's not there, then I'm not going to go and buy something I don't want just for the sake of buying.
So you've got the clarity in terms of which one, what do you want
for exactly
the next one right now. So you just need to wait for the right one to come up and pull the trigger.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
And where do you want to see yourself in a couple of years' time? Where do you want to take the portfolio to?
Well, I think
got a goal? Have you got some sort of?
I mean, for me, the whole reason for investing is to have choices down the track,
absolutely,
and I guess sustainability, and that I would love to have the choice at some point not to have to work, but work because I want to work. Obviously, that's a long-term goal, but it's really providing sort of for me and my family down the track. In between now and sort of 30, I'd love to grow to 10 properties and have sort of a larger portfolio that's quite maintaining itself.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be quite sustainable in how I'm doing it and not there's aggressive ways to invest.
Of course, yes.
And I wouldn't say that I'm not aggressive, but it's also it's running a sort of a tight ship and not...
How you find a balance.
Yeah, finding that right balance.
Finding that balance.
Yeah.
So 10 properties by 30.
Yeah.
Got six more years to go.
Yeah, so six more if I buy another this year, then we're at... seven with one a year basically.
That's a good goal to have. And what do you have, like a figure that you want to be able to hit by the end of say 40, or what sort of passive income that you want to be able to achieve at that
time? I haven't worked it back that far.
Okay.
It really just depends the sort of properties we're buying, because if I'm buying something for investment, for development, then obviously the yield and return on that's going to be a little bit different. To buy, if I'm buying a house with a granny flat on the back. And it's also sort of the right piece at the right time. I'll give you an example. I went to a seminar the other day about granny flats and selling granny flats. So I came out of that thinking, I've got to buy a house with a granny flat. Then you go and you talk to your investors or your mentors, and then all of a sudden, okay, maybe that's not the right choice, because great, granny flat's a good return, but would you rather not go and spend that 50 grand and buy another property and you all of a sudden have two properties?
Mm-hmm.
It's and then the bank looks at that, and it's the way you structure it at the right time.
Yeah, it's different accumulative stages, and
that's where I think you need to draw upon the right people to give you that right advice. Because I mean, I got excited, 10% return, that's crazy, and on paper that's amazing. But you look at that, okay, that's whatever it is, $75 a week. Great, that's amazing, profit. But would I not just go and buy two properties and then in 10 years do the subdivision and have four properties all yielding at 6-7%?
Yep.
And then it's just understanding understanding what you're going to do at what time.
Mm.
Question around buyer's agent. So if you're buying property interstate, you are a real estate agent yourself anyway. So buying in the Sydney market, you know the inside out, the prices and everything, and you've got access to all the reports that are required. So you're not using a buyer's agent, makes perfect sense. If you are going to go interstate, don't you think buyer's agent will add a value?
Yeah, I think I certainly see value in the buyer's agents. I probably see more value in their services for an off-market property than something that's on the market.
Mm.
On the market, you're competing with the market. Off-market, there might be other buyers out there that would pay more for it than what you are buying it for. So I don't get me wrong, I think there's value in a buyer's agent. I think you've got to get the right buyer's agent with the right experience. I wouldn't be using a buyer's agent that doesn't have a portfolio of their own, because if they're trying to sell you an investment property and they don't own any investment properties, what does that tell you about the buyer's agent?
That's right.
So, yeah, I think it's really the right people for the – your team. You work it back from your team. If you want to have a buyer's agent and you see value in that, you've just got to make sure that you're buying a property that value is allocated in, that they're giving you a good enough deal that, say, you're buying something in Logan, you don't want to be buying something for $300 that rents for $300 a week with a buyer's agent. There's not, unless it's like a 2,000 square meter block or something.
Exactly.
But if it's just a normal set and forget property, then what's the value in that buyer's agent? You could go buy that yourself. But if they're being a property off market for $250 and rents for $350 a week, then all of a sudden that's a different story. If there's value add in what they're bringing to you, then great, I'd be using a buyer's agent.
Yeah.
But if they're all they're going to do is find you a property that's on the market and you're just going to compete and they're probably just going to throw your offer in, it's not really – it all comes back to the deal and how they're going to negotiate for you. It could be on the market. The property could be on the market and they could be aware of a situation. I heard of another one last week there. The owner just wanted to sell it that week. It wasn't so much about getting the best price. They just wanted to go on that week. So the buyer's agent can find you that property, but that's one – how many properties are there like that? So it's really just about the deal.
Yeah, and also for, you know, buyer's agents, I think it depends on your availability and your time and your skill set and whether you're passionate about properties as well, right?
Exactly.
At the end of the day, like, you know, you're passionate about property, you want to actually learn this, and the best way to learn this is actually do the deal yourself,
yeah,
to actually find a deal yourself. But if, say, for example, today you're married, you've got two kids that need your time, situation might be very different. As much as you're passionate about it, you might not have the ability or the time to be able to locate the deal yourself. So in that case, then buyer's agent could be an option at that time. So it just comes down to time commitment and also, as you said, off market value and what sort of value do they bring on the table.
Exactly. If, for instance, if I was a teacher or a nurse, yep, and I had no understanding, or not no understanding, but didn't understand, I guess, the way agents work and how things are done, then yep, it would be a different story.
Correct.
However, I mean, I have looked at a buyer's agent. I caught up with one the other day for a different sort of proposition, for not a property in Logan, for a different, he does a lot of, or is familiar with a lot of, you buy land and build in the Illawarra district.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a different understanding. I don't understand that at all. Or I have obviously some understanding, but I've never done that product. I don't know what that is.
Mm.
So his relationship with the developers is really where his value comes into play, in that you're buying a block under market value.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they do have their place, but it's really what is their place and what is the value they bring. The fee is not the issue. It's just the value they bring.
That's right.
Mm. Good point.
Andrew, as a young investor, and obviously you've already accumulated two properties, yep, within the last 2 years, which is fantastic. What are the key three lessons that you learned in the last 2 years or for the two properties that you would like to share with our audiences?
I think, nice one. I think don't rush it. There is an ego associated with owning property. Everyone wants to grow the biggest, but I can tell you, people don't care. My friends, some of them don't even know I own property. The ones that do don't really care. it's more.
They care more about what you drive.
Literally. I mean, our generation is very much sort of materialistic, and like owning property is a material, but it's, what's that property going to do for me down the track? So don't get caught up in the, I'm doing this for the ego. I mean, at one point I can tell you I was there for that. I wanted to get as many properties as I could so I can puff my chest up. But it's now, what is this going to do for me? And what is this going to do for me down the track? My family, partner, all that sort of stuff.
It's going to buy you a Lambo, mate.
When the property's made money, I'm sure Andrew can upgrade at that time as he likes to. But, you know, it's important to accumulate assets that appreciate in value first.
Yeah. So take the ego out of it. No Lambos. I think you need to have the right team. You need the right broker, the right solicitor, the right property manager. And a good way to do that is through the forums. Property chat's a great one.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the networking events, you meet great people, and they really, you just ask questions for the right people, and you need to grow that team to a point where, for instance, Michael from Mortgage Channel, my mortgage broker, it's just, he doesn't care if I buy or not. He's just wanting to help me. He just wants to give me the right advice.
That's right.
There's so many good brokers out there. David's another example of that. They're just there to help and want to give you the right advice. So you need to have the right team in place so that when you do buy, everything goes in order. And your pest and builder, you want to be able to have a phone call straight after. Are we good to go? Because a lot of the time with these deals, it's acting with speed. That is not necessarily going to be the purchase price that's going to get you the deal. It's being able to act with speed or other terms that are favorable to the owner. It's not always the price.
That's very true.
And the third one, I think you just got to network with like-minded individuals.
Surround yourself with.
Very much similar to your team, but this is reaching out to other investors as well.
Okay.
So go get coffee with them. This property investment space is everyone loves to help, particularly I found younger people reaching out to more senior investors.
Yes.
They love to help you and they love to hear your story and you love to hear theirs. I think there's so many different opinions on what you can do on property and et cetera. The best thing to do is just to go and talk to people and see why what's working for them. Take notes on it. See, and just do the pros and cons. Is this going to be good for me down the track? But I think really the big one is the team and also taking the ego out of it.
Yeah.
And just why are you doing this? Come back to your why. Because, I mean, if you're doing it for the ego, that's great. That's one thing. Go and buy four one-bedroom, like a small block in the middle of Dubbo with four apartments on it. Then you can say you've got four properties. Great. There's your ego.
Dubbo seems to be the hit all the time. Yeah. I don't know why, but anyway.
And don't get caught up in the fads. There's people, everyone, don't get caught up in, oh, go buy in Newcastle, go buy in Central Coast. Just really take the analysis out of it and take the speed off of it. It's a big law of attraction thing. When at the right time, it will come into your life.
For a 23-year-old Andrew, I have to say some good words of wisdom you have over there. And you seem like a knowledgeable guy, surely, some of the things that you've said. So that's good. Keep up the spirits. Keep buying the property. Keep pumping up your chest. One day you'll have the Ferrari or a Lambo.
And I'm sure we'll bring Andrew back.
I want a Land Cruiser. Right? I want to go four-wheel driving.
There you go.
I've got a Jeep Grand Cherokee. Join the party.
There we go.
Got a off the property topic for a second. Something completely separate. Aliens, believer or not.
Aliens.
Yep.
I mean, they're a pretty statistical guy. The amount of room, space out there, it can't not be something else.
Oh, I love the answer, mate. That was the honestly, that was the answer that I was hoping to get out of some guy who's knowledgeable enough. Space is huge. There's many galaxies.
Exactly. You kind of said nothing out there. I mean, are you a believer?
100%.
Have you seen any aliens? We don't have that discussion.
The only one that I can think of is Elon Musk.
Elon Musk, Tony Stark. Seeing them on the screen, yeah.
However, do you think we are actually in a simulation like Xbox?
Someone's
playing the game?
He loves this.
I've heard Elon Musk talk about this.
Yes, he did.
I can't comprehend it, to be honest. It's that is the biggest. That would be massive. I just can't comprehend that at the moment.
Fair enough.
Do I have mental breakdowns about the afterlife? Yes.
Yes.
All the time? Because, I mean, have you ever thought about it? What happens after you die? That's eternity. Mm. Eternity is not even like your lifetime. It's not like a week. It's forever. It freaks me out sometimes.
Well, see, the thing is, in a game, in an Xbox game, you never die. It's just a
reason. You're talking about Grand Theft Auto, you just pop up the next top door, right? And off you go.
Yeah.
We're going to start the next police chase.
Yeah, exactly, GDA. it's super interesting area. Just something that...
So I'm putting it back on you. What are your thoughts on the simulation?
That are we in a simulation, you mean?
Yeah.
There's a 50-50 chance. Like, if you think about a lot of the things that we are doing these days, I mean, in terms of technology, if you look at where the technology is headed and all, right? So it's hard to believe that in a space out there that's such – there's such big space that nobody's out there that's smarter than us. It's just hard to comprehend, believe that, right? And if there is someone smarter than us, then they surely – are probably controlling us as well to some extent, and the thought process. And having a background in IT, in programming, right? It's, to me, it's like you have written a piece of code, right? And it does few things when an event occurs, right? So if you think around the thought process and all, to some extent, if it's programmed by someone who's super smart, which to some people they call them God, it's likely that we are in a simulation.
So you've gone from 50-50 to likely.
That's 75%.
That likely 50-50.
What about you, David?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, mate, I've seen a lot of the sci-fi stuff with Black Mirror and stuff, and I actually think that very likely that we could be in the simulation.
Oh, no.
Likely or unlikely?
I'm even more than 75% now, Jazz.
Sorry, David, you're saying that we are in a simulation, 75% chance.
Yes, likely. Could be. I don't know whether you guys watched the Black Mirror series before, but there's been one episode which I think it just talks about, like, you know, the simulation just keeps circulating itself. You know, you always start with the same start, and then you'll go through the life, but then, you know, ultimately you're just a small chip within a microcomputer somewhere, essentially. And that scares the hell out of me, because, like, you know, you think that you've got free will, but you don't. Actually, you don't. There's very limited things that you can do within your lifespan, and it cycles around. It cycles. It just repeats.
Interesting.
But anyway, that's
I'm never coming on this podcast again.
Right. It's before we wrap this up.
Where did you leave that, man? Seriously.
Anyways, before we wrap this up, Andrew, any question for us?
Not after.
I've got one. It's a three-part question. I want your three tips for investing, both of you.
Okay.
David, do you want to go first?
I'll start. Definitely find out your why, because that was a big trigger for me in terms of why I started. Mm. You know, what do you do this for? Like you said, basically. So that's one I very want to focus on. What's the reason behind you doing this? And a lot of times when your why is not clear enough, like, you won't take action. You might take one action, or you might just get one property, but then that's not going to get you anywhere, right? So focus on your why. Second thing is look at the whole portfolio as a business. That's actually a big trigger point for me as well, because beforehand I wasn't aware. I just thought, you know, accumulate one or two, let it run. But then I started learning about how to run as a business. If you're losing money on the property, what can you do to try to turn it around? You know, you got to treat it like a business with business mindset. To say, is there anything that you can improve on in terms of improving the yield, or how can you do something to improve the capital growth? So that's where the value add stuff comes into the equation. And that comes in later on in the picture of the investing path. And number three is the lead up to number two, is buy something that's got that potential to be able to do something. The first couple that I bought are just like your ones, buys and hold, nothing that you can do later on. But then as I get to my number five, number six, you know, I started to realize I need to do something more than that.
Yeah.
And I don't have that mentality on day one. You know, I wish I had that mentality on day one, but then it's like, you got to learn how to walk before you can run as well. So, you know, whilst I try to guide people like you and, you know, other clients at, you know, what sort of property you should be looking at, but I know that they have that kind of mindset, but they may not be able to necessarily understand why you want to be able to buy that type of property first.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the thing that I learned when I get towards the number five, number six, number seven, but I wish I learned that earlier.
Yeah.
So those are the three biggest ones I can think of right now.
Jazz?
Yeah, the first one will be is the success always leaves clues, right? So try and find people who are successful and see if you can somehow talk to them. Technology is advanced these days, LinkedIn, Twitter, whatever, right? There's easy ways you can get hold of these people who have accomplished something that you want to achieve. So there's always enough clues. You just got to follow the path, that's all. So that's the first one. Second is the team. Like you said before, I'm a true believer of the team. If you surround yourself with the right people, in fact, there's a famous saying, you're the average of the five people around you, five or 10, whatever it was. I think it was five.
Five. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, so if and I truly believe that's 100% true. If you are surrounded with the right five people, you will get to the path that you want to, but you're going to be the average of those five. So if that average is not the right average, then chop it, start again. It's the fact, right? So you just got to change the team if it doesn't work.
That's true.
Third is saving before spending. I do believe in that, or in investing before spending kind of thing, right? So we all want to, we are all very materialistic people to some extent, right? So we enjoy nice cars, nice holidays, all that stuff, right? But over the long term, somewhere it leaves you very shallow. Like, it's not a success, those kind of things. They're just material things that makes you happy for a few hours, few days, few years, right?
Yeah. You're always going to feel empty in the long term.
Correct.
Exactly. You will always feel empty in the long term. So if you really want to feel fulfilled and have that happiness that you after, then you got to really focus on the things that make you happy. And generally, they're not the materialistic things, to be honest. So try and save as much as you can so you can actually spend that money on the things that you want that will give you that happiness, right? So it probably...
You're funny you should say that, actually. Yeah. Recently, I've sort of just...
Hey, sorry for that, Andrew, but the point that I'm making is free up your time. And the way to free up your time is to have enough money saved or invested, right? And once you have that, then you'll have time to explore yourself and do the things, try the things that you want to. Because there's 100 things you will try, and there's only one that will click that you will probably enjoy. So it requires a lot of patience, time, and money.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, you were saying something.
I was saying interesting recently. I've been thinking about obviously what gives you joy and things like that. And a lot of it is just giving to not necessarily financially or items, but just
about giving
your time, helping. You get a lot out of it. It's incredible. And you
giving
think that
the best
you
way.
Sit there thinking, I want the Lamborghini or whatever it is. It doesn't do it for you. You're just going to be chasing the next best thing.
Exactly.
It's the satisfaction that you get out of helping people. That's really the gratification that you actually get, which is immeasurable and indescribable.
Exactly. 100%.
I don't have any stats to back this up, but I'm thinking it out loud. I think the people who get success too early in their life, like in their teenage age, because they became a singer or some of their other skills took off. Somewhere they go down the wrong path, and there's plenty of examples in general for that. And what you realize is that it's just because the brain wasn't mature enough to understand those things, right? And as your brain gets mature enough, you realize that these things don't really matter that much. What matters is giving, helping others out, having that gratitude, and just fulfilling your dreams.
I can clearly remember Michael Shah saying to me, I want the people around me to be successful because it's a lot funner to enjoy a boat with your friends than by yourself.
Spot on. All right. So it all adds up in one way or the other. But there are three tips.
All right. Shall we wrap it up?
Yes, you're going to do that now.
All right. Well, I'll do the wrap up. Yeah, now it's my turn. All right. Well, thanks, Andrew. Look, appreciate your time today and, sharing your personal experiences. We're sure to bring you on again probably sometime next year.
Yeah.
Hopefully you'll have acquired another one or two and, you'll be able to share a bit more in terms of what you learned and what the new property is.
Yeah. And I thank you for having me. It's been really awesome to talk about the journey and just everything. Thank you so much.
Great. It's great to have young, passionate property investors like you.
Yeah.
We're certainly open to any other people who's interested in sharing their own stories to jump on. And, Jazz and I don't bite, as Andrew can attest.
Yep, now. He's fine. It's all good.
let us know if you find aliens, that's all.
You let me know as well.
Yeah,
sure. You won't hear from me again.
Fair enough. All good.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thanks all the audiences for joining us today. Again, if you like this episode, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or Android or whatever platform that you're using. Your 5-star rating is the biggest motivation for us to produce more content. So we'd really appreciate it. And as always, I'd like to thank you and we'll see you again next time and we'll keep Spark Your Fire. Jazz and David, bye.
you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.